Deborah, with her 30 years of being an entrepreneur and creating over 7 companies, knows exactly what it means to accept the mission. When you make that decision, when you accept the mission to become a solopreneur, to take yourself and your talents to market, then you embrace a life of not only unlimited possibilities, but also the unknown. It's an elixir of fear and bravery that only someone who's taken the leap really understands. On our show, Deb digs deep with her guest to highlight what you, the listener, wants to know. The stories, the whys, and the hows to navigate the journey to success. Get ready to hear from some of the most incredible mission takers from Generation Z to Boomers. So sit up, perk up, and get ready to be blown away. Now here is your host, Deborah Drummond.
Welcome, 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 welcome back to Mission Accepted. Mission Accepted, what does that mean? Who the heck am I going to be listening to today? Well, you know, because you've been listening to me so far, and thank you so much. You're either watching or you're listening to the podcast, watching the video. Don't forget to share, because Mission Accepted is about saying yes, whether you are wanting to or not. You might be jumping off on a cliff by saying yes, or you've been in this mission for a while and something comes across your desk and you're like, absolutely. And I always say, the more you want to say no is the more you should say yes, right? Because that's what accepting the mission is. So if you've been in this wonderful world of entrepreneurship or alterpreneurship, which whom we have on the show today, or if you're a creative, like a singer, a director, you know, you're in TV, you're painting, whatever it is that you're doing, whether you're creative, you're in media, you at some point decided to kind of maybe break out of your box or break out of the box of what you thought your life would be and take it in a whole different direction. You're going to start to hear some really cool interviews on the Gen Z Is Us weekly show that has just started. So having those amazing Gen Zs showing up, because they're showing up. If you're in social media, you're seeing these amazing young entrepreneurs coming out of the gate. And the wonderful thing I love about this show is that it bridges all the generations together. I just recently found out the new generation is called Generation Alpha. I'm like, well, that's interesting, because they're the newest. Isn't Alpha supposed to be like top dog? So I don't know who branded that, but seriously, not a marketing company. Anyways, we are super excited. Not only do I want to highlight that as you're listening to Terry today, that if you think, I'd love to be on that show, or better yet, the Mission Accepted book that's coming out in December. And I'm going to tell you more as we go through this glorious year about that. That's 262 people rocking history, then you know what? You know how to get in touch with us. So without further ado, I want to bring on Terry. Now, you know, when you read someone's bio, you meet them and you're like, oh my gosh, such a cool person. And then you read their bio and you're like, yeah, you know what? She's a coach. She's an artist. She's got apparently revolving teenagers that come through her home. So she's a parent. She's a cancer survivor. So yay, awesome. One more for the people, right? But the one thing that stuck out for me, and I got to tell you, Terry, you're going to have to share, is about this one-eyed cat. She's a one-eyed cat. I was like, you know, I'm like, well, there's something I haven't heard in someone's bio before. In all honesty, this is a woman who's very grounded. If you are an entrepreneur or you are walking around the planet with two legs or apparently four, this woman covers a pretty powerful topic that we all come up against, whether we want to admit it or not. And that's about self-sabotage and some things like procrastination and what have you. So she's going to touch on that today. But Terry, first of all, maybe just come on in and say hello and share with us a little bit about your mission and why you decided to accept it.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Deb. I am really honored to be here. a bit about me. Yes, I do have, she does have two eyes, just one works.
Hey, you got one.
Yeah. And so I'm coming to you from Victoria, British Columbia. I am an executive coach and empowerment strategist with the Unstuck Duck Coaching. And I work mostly with women entrepreneurs that are struggling with self-sabotage. So the ways that we throw ourselves under the bus and, you know, really about mastering the muck that keeps us stuck. And I use a lot of duck references. So I apologize if I get a little bit off on the duck tangent. But anyway, what made me mission accepted? I will get there. Yes. I definitely had a moment. I was thinking about that in the shower this morning. is when did I have that mission accepted? I want to step into life in a different way. I was sitting in the boardroom. I was having a conversation with, well, there was a group of us, and I was getting in trouble, as I always was, as a disruptor, for speaking my mind and for calling out inefficiencies. And I was frustrated. And I remember sitting there going, wow, you know, there's so much more to life than this. And realized in that moment that I was not there for much longer in that corporate setting. It just, I felt like as you mentioned, I'm a cancer survivor. And before I was diagnosed with breast cancer, I had a moment where like I was a super well-oiled machine. I was working full-time in a super high stress, high performance, excellence was like part of the culture. And I did my master's while working full-time, hosting international students, having two of elite hockey players as sons. I was, you know, my husband and I were like passing in the night, and it was just really high octane. Like everything was just like well-oiled machine. And then the universe had a different plan for me and threw a brick my way, and I got hit with the breast cancer stick. So I had to sit back. I had 3 years I was in treatment, and I got to really sit back and look at every rock in my riverbed and choose what I wanted to keep and what I didn't want to keep. And what ended up leaving was the corporate high octane job. I was not interested in that life anymore.
Right.
And then I decided to go back to school. I became a coach, and I really stand for living life with purpose on purpose.
I love those words, high octane. It almost would be the best name for the podcast, because I think that we can all relate to that, entrepreneur or not. You know, there's many times in our life that we have that download of have to, should to, want to. And that's the trick. You know, that's kind of the hook, right? Is the have to, should to, want to. A lot of these things you don't not want to do, but it's about to what capacity, to what cost, to what derivative, right? And so it's interesting, because when you describe what it is that you were doing, many of us probably relate on a certain level. And then you got hit with some epiphany, whatever that epiphany is, you know, or that gut feeling just starts to talk to you. I don't think this corporate job is good for me anymore. And it's funny, because, you know, I owned a health studio for 30 years or 27. And when people would come to me, some people would come to me in the preventative stage, because that's always the stage I wanted to work in, right? I'm sure for you as a coach, you're like, when people are like, I have a feeling, you're like, oh, yay. They're in this place where I'm like, well, I think my body's kind of sore. Or then you have the people that come to you in the acute stage where they're like, I can't turn my neck anymore. Or, you know, I'm frustrated, nothing's working. And you're like, okay. So you're at an acute stage, and there's, you know, quite a bit more work that you have to do. When I hear that high octane, I think about people that are in that acute stage, right? Where when something really hits up, it can really make you wake up, whatever that wake up call is. And then, you know, so you go from this high octane life. How did you know that coaching was the next step? Where did that come in? Because you obviously were very versed, very experienced, and you probably had a plethora of choices to do. How did you know that this was where you needed to go?
Well, I actually, like I said, I got in trouble at work. And I was told that I needed to do some effective communications courses. And so I, in the rebel mindset that I am, decided to sign up for every single course that HR offered. And like, I'm talking, 6 months, I didn't work a full week, because I was like, I'm going to do every single one of them and I'll show you. And what ended up happening was I fell in love with personal development. So I got speaking to the coach that was doing some of these courses, because they had the same person come and doing all these different things. And it was in a course called EQ for your IQ. And I talked to her at the break and said, hey, you know, I really like what you're doing. Like, how did you get into doing what you're doing? And she suggested, I read a book. It's called Playing Big by Tara Moore. It's for women who want to step up, create, and lead. And I read it in 2 days. I devoured it, and I was like, oh my gosh, like there is more life there is more to life than this, right?
Yeah.
And really just learning how to step into my own voice in a way that was constructive instead of destructive, stepping into my own space in the world was important to me. Because how many people do you know that, you know, they go through life, they get the watch, they've been at the same job for 50 years, they get a watch and a pin, and then they retire and then they die. And I just didn't want that to be my life. I'm meant for more than that. And I feel like every single one of us is meant for more than that. And so I formed a relationship with this coach, and I started reaching out to other people that I knew that were coaches, and decided that that was something that I really wanted to do. I wanted to inspire people to live more fully, to live in a way that was intentional with what was important for them, for their boundaries, for their values, for their families, for their future. And it doesn't necessarily mean leaving your corporate job. For everybody that thinks, you know, that's not at all what I'm saying, but sometimes it's just about saying, you know, being able to speak your truth and being able to do things that bring you joy. Like how many, I can't even imagine, like every day I infuse joy into my life. I just can't imagine living the way that I was living before again. Like it, the idea.
Yeah.
Just,
I think that, yeah, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I think that that's an important point, that not everybody goes into full-time entrepreneurship or leaves something or leaves it one day and starts their business the next day. I mean, there's process that happens. There's awareness that happens. There's, like you said, so when you were doing all those courses, which, you know, thank goodness for your rebel side. so if you have a rebel side out there and you decide to be an entrepreneur, it will serve you. That's just, we're just talking from two crazy girls here. It will serve you. But so when you were going through that, was that before or after you were diagnosed? Was that before?
It was after.
It was after.
I had, did not see it coming. The breast cancer was not on my radar. Even getting sick wasn't on my radar. We literally have critical illness insurance, and like my husband is insured like out the wazoo. Yes. And we had no insurance for me because I assumed I'm going to live till I'm 100. Right.
Yes.
And he wasn't. So we were like,
he seemed to be the one that, you know, if you were throwing some kind of like, well, it's going to be one of us, it was him. And then life throws curveballs, doesn't it? So,
So I was diagnosed in January, 2015. And, it was supposed to be something super small. Like it was a tiny, tiny little tumor. Like it was smaller than a pinky fingernail, but then it ended up becoming, in 4 months, I ended up with 5 tumors and it was just super aggressive. So it was like, okay, we're just going to do everything. So I had 21 rounds of chemo, 28 rounds of radiation. I had 6 surgeries. I had, and enough time really to assess, to go, okay, so what is important to me? Who is important to me? And some people didn't make the cut. Every board that I was on didn't make the cut. Many of the volunteer opportunities didn't make the cut. And the big thing, so then I went back to work and I wasn't the same person that they had hired. I wasn't the same person before. I wasn't willing to put in the 90 hours a week. I wasn't willing to put in, you know, and really, is this a podcast I can swear on?
Well, you know what, just by saying that, we get it.
I was going to say my give a shit meter broke. Like I really didn't care.
Right.
And so I had the opportunity to go back to school. I went to Royal Roads and got my executive coaching degree.
Right.
I also actually before that, here's a super funny story. I get called by my coach that I was talking to. She's like, this would be perfect for you. She sends me a flyer that they were recruiting for a reality TV show.
Okay.
It was called The Purpose Project. And it was about finding your purpose together as a group. And it never aired. It never became a thing. But I did this whole, you know, 9-month program that was all filmed.
Oh, wow.
The whole thing. And I learned so much about myself, about really how I show up in the world and how that's serving me. Really, that was the big one for me, was like, if I'm going through with my elbows up, how is that helping? How's that working for you? You know, if I'm constantly running into process, I'm running into other people, I'm constantly like, let's go. That's not going to serve me. And being able to go, wow, that part was really pivotal for me. And that was what made me decide to go to school and get my executive coaching degree. Cause I had already done my master's. I did my master's before I got sick. And I'm a lifelong learner, apparently. I'm going to be learning things till I die. But that was what just made me decide to go in. And when I went into executive coaching, I went because I felt like I was coming out of a really toxic relationship with my boss and with my past employer. And I wanted to fix it, to be honest. And then what ended up getting fixed was me, because I have no control over that.
So there's a lot of really great gems. I want to kind of stop here, because there's a lot of really great gems when you're, you know, to listen to your story, wherever I'm at, whatever it is that I'm doing. So one is that sometimes there's gifts that come into our life that look like brown bag of old takeout food, and we never know what's going to be, you know, when you open the bag. The other one is kind of life by surprise. Sometimes life hits you by surprise, and it's really about what you do with it. I hear a lot about priorities. Sometimes we can sit down and, you know, I do that maybe quarterly, write down my priorities. I mean, I have a pretty tight schedule that I follow each day in terms of, you know, I have a little system that I have all the things that I need to do. There might be 20 on the list. And then I have a little system that moves my priorities, but keeping things prioritized in the areas of life that bring you joy. And here's, I think, what I think is important to know, not every day of your life is going to be quartered. Like, how much time did you spend with family today? How much did you exercise? How much did you this? I think if you have, like you say, a sense of joy about your life, and you have a system that works for you, whether it's this month or this month, or, you know, I know that my daughter's having a baby in May, and so my family meter is going to be going up, you know, all that kind of stuff. If you can get okay with that. And the other thing that really kind of struck me is about that last statement that you said. I mean, there's lots of times we can't control our clients. We'll talk a little bit about that. Can't control our clients. We can't control what people do outside. Sometimes we can't control the economy. Sometimes we can't control. I mean, we've all learned a lot about letting go of control over the last 24 months, let's face it. But the one thing, you know, you hear it, right? In partnership, in relationship, in work relationship, you can't necessarily change that person, but when you change, things change. When you change, things change. And sometimes they look more tolerable, right? Because you have a deeper understanding. And then sometimes that you look and you're like, I don't think that's where I want to spend my next, you know, 5, 10, 15. So let's get to the heart of the matter here, because there's things that we see as, you know, you coach, I train, I work with people for top performance, you work with people on world performance, you know what I mean? So you'll define more about what that looks like. And that's just my wording from reading your bio and knowing you a little bit. Is so let's talk about what are some of the signs of self-sabotage, or when someone's like, I hear that word, I know it's interesting, I'm sure I do it, but what does that look like? Can you enlighten us a little bit?
Sure. So for me, I consider self-sabotage as the muck that keeps us stuck. It's the stuff that where we know what we want, maybe we know what we want. We think we know what we want, but we're going to do literally everything else but that thing. So it's procrastinating. It's sitting and going, okay, instead of writing this blog post, I'm going to hit number 872 on Candy Crush. Or I'm going to, Even working with people, like I'm going to just get my own way because this is what I want, but really not noticing the people around me that are falling by the wayside because I haven't paid much attention to anyone else's feelings, or, you know, that's a way of sabotaging relationships. We sabotage ourselves by not doing the things that we say we're going to do, or having to be right. That's a big one. You know, having to be right in a relationship is the first, you know, nail in the coffin for a relationship. But when it comes to entrepreneurship, it's mostly going to be things like procrastination, like limiting beliefs, like using words like, I have to do this. Well, that means that you're sitting in a victim stance. Or I need, literally means you're sitting in lack and scarcity. instead of going, you know what, I choose to do this. You know, I'm choosing to put my bookkeeping on the calendar so that I actually get it done, because it serves me later on down the road, so that come March 31st of, we're not suddenly looking back to 2021 to see if we made any money, right? It's about stepping into the, I like to say, stepping, listening to the adult in your head. You know, every time that my inner child or inner teenager goes, but I don't wanna. It's like, you know what? You don't get to drink out of the toilet today. Let's go. It's that adult in my head that's like, okay, when it comes to, self-sabotage is really about setting yourself a situational purpose for what it is that you want and keeping that as a litmus test for when you're making your decisions. So setting yourself up for your values and what it is that's important to you.
So, I mean, my bells are kind of ringing off because I can see so very much in, you know, in a part of one of the businesses that I do, you know, we have people line up to be accountability partners. And I always say, get an accountability partner that's not going to listen and take your excuses and align with them. You mm-hmm. want to have an accountability partner that's going to go, you said you were going to do this. Why not? And then I think when you get to start to discover why not, that's when someone like yourself steps in, because you have the skills clearly that can maybe do a little bit more of that, you know, coaching, psychological, like, what is this? There's probably some deservedness, maybe worthiness, maybe all that kind of stuff brewing underneath. I mean, I don't think people want to sabotage, but when you talk about limiting beliefs, they may not feel like they may want to make that kind of money. They may want to have that kind of success. They maybe want to keep making the same money they're making, but cut their hours down, but they don't really know why they're not doing what they said they were going to do. They might be observing themselves in patterns like, God, I'm still making the same money that I was 6 months ago, and yet I've done this, this, and this, and this. How does that happen? Like when the hands go up in the air and you're like, how does that happen? So can you share a little bit more? Can you dig in? I don't know if I'm going in the right direction, but you know, as a trainer and a coach, we both have had clients, and we see clients that are committed. And then you meet with them the next week and you're like,
Yes. Oh, I thought that's what I wanted. Yeah. And I think the big thing for me, I work with a particular quadrant assessment that I learned in the Purpose Project, which is not DISC or anything else like that. It's kind of like DISC, to be fair, but it's super simple in that, you know, understanding who you are and why you do the things you do and what motivates you. And what doesn't motivate you helps you to take the shame away when you are procrastinating, for example, just to use procrastination as an example.
Okay.
So for me, for example, I'm a promoter, which means that I'm like a fun, creative, spontaneous, you know, artistic, you know, that type of person. So if you're trying to make me, and do you know Gretchen Rubin's work, the four tendencies?
Okay, no, I don't.
She's got a really great, easy way of saying it. So there's different, there's either intrinsic or external motivation. So the different quadrants, some people are motivated by other people telling them what to do. Some people are motivated by their own inner stuff. Some people are motivated by both. And some people are motivated by neither. So that's me. Mm. I'm a rebel. People telling me what to do, I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. And me even saying, yeah, you should do this. Well, I don't know. but then asking, how's that working for you? So for me, I need it to be fun. If you're telling me to time block, that means that sounds like jail to me. Like it just sounds awful. But if you have someone that's in like a controller quadrant, time blocking, having control of their time and figuring out exactly, you know, they are intrinsically motivated. That having that time to be able to set yourself up for success works for them. And somebody who is externally motivated will be somebody that's a really great employee because somebody else will tell them what to do. And they'll just do it because that was what I was told to do. And then other people are like super pleaser people. You know, they're going to want to make sure that everybody's happy but them. You know, mm-hmm. So there's the four different quadrants. There's the promoters, which are the party fun, you know, creative people. There's the supporters, which are the people and the peacemakers. They don't like conflict. They're very, you know, the therapists and the, you know, accommodating people. Then there's the analyzers, and they're the data people that like spreadsheets and tickety-boo and perfection people. And then there's the powerful people, which are the CEOs, the controllers, the people that don't necessarily have that spontaneity or value the spontaneity the same way that people in the upper quadrants do. And when I'm working with my clients, I'm working with them to see what is motivating them, and speaking to that and being like, you know what, it's okay if time blocking isn't your thing. Let's figure out a strategy that works for you. For me, gamify it. Put a timer on, see how much stuff I can get done. I'm in. And it's right? If it's not fun, I'm not really interested.
Right.
And because I like to save effort wherever I can, if I like to use a classic example, I'm on Weight Watchers right now.
Okay.
And as I go into, you know, I go along and I'm like, okay, I want to lose weight. But so they give me these points, right? So you have points and you can have all these students. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to manipulate it so that I'm getting as least amount of points as possible, so I can still have a bottle of wine at night. Well, how's that serving me? I'm still, if I go to Starbucks and get like a bacon sandwich, whatever the sandwich, right?
Yeah.
They make it so easy in the Weight Watchers app that I can just pick that sandwich. But I'm like, well, actually, if I break it apart, there's an English muffin, a piece of bacon, you know, if I say, you know, take the cheese off, then it's way less points. But ultimately, I'm basically saving up my points and manipulating the system, which is fun for me because it's, I feel like I'm taking my own power back. That's my own thing. But at the expense of actually losing weight, like I'm not actually doing what I want to do. I've made it so convoluted and manipulated it and shot myself in the foot and self-sabotaged myself to the point where I'm like, oh, see, if I actually just followed the instructions and did the thing,
right,
then I would probably have more success. That's classic self-sabotage right there, where I'm like, you know, but I'm smarter than that. I think I'm smarter than the system, and I'm trying to show myself as being some kind of upper, having some kind of upper hand. It doesn't work for me.
I love how you're being transparent right now, because here's the thing. I think every entrepreneur knows on a gut level is that know thyself. But guess what? As you start to move along in your journey of, you know, becoming a better person, a smarter business person, a more creative, you know, because we all have our tendencies of what we're good at. We all filter through those rose colored glasses. As we say, you've got those different personality styles, which is why we go to someone who actually can see ourselves in activity, because sometimes we can't see it ourselves. But then when you know yourself, you're able to call yourself out, right? I call it self-observation. I used to think, because I did a lot of meditating, I used to teach meditation, and eventually you can get to the place where you can watch your own stuff. Now, here's the great thing. I love how you talked about the word shame. Because when I think of shame, I automatically think of, you know, Brené. But when you think of the word shame, because when you see yourself not doing, there's other two things that people do. One, they kind of just put their head under the sand and dig deeper because they don't feel good about it. Or the more observation you have, or if you have someone in your life that you can go and talk to that next week, it's someone that can align with you and ally with you and just go, absolutely normal. And then as you start to move, because we call it testing, right? Like as you start to break out and go to those next levels, you're going to get tested. You know, and it's like, what's that about? It's like, well, because you're coming up against yourself, right?
Yep.
So if you have someone along in that path with you, you know, training, coaching, whatever you want to call it, inspiring, mentoring, whatever, then they can see parts of yourself. And if you know enough of yourself, you could maybe listen.
I like to think of it as if you're climbing a mountain, right? You're climbing a mountain. You want to see the vista. You want to see this beautiful, you've climbed all the way up to the mountain and there's a boulder at the top of the mountain, but because it's on your path, you walk right up to it and you put your nose right up against it and you can't see the vista.
Right.
You can't see it. And we do this. We try to hit that, you know, if I keep pushing against this boulder and keep pushing and keep pushing, then maybe I'll be able to see the thing. But if we, the answer is to step back to see and look around, what are the other ways around this boulder, right? Like that is not moving. And if you continue to walk up against it and hit that wall over and over and over again, that's when we start to really feel a shame, you know, all that stuff. And all those tapes that go on in our head about how I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough. Oh my gosh. Like if I could just, why am I doing this to myself? Still doing it, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to step back and being like, oh, I didn't even realize. And that's where a coach comes in, because coaches are really good at being like, you realize you're standing right up against this particular boulder. Oh, step back a little bit, take a look around, see what it is that is getting in your way, because sometimes you just can't see it. Your nose is right up against the rock.
Yeah. That's a great analogy, right? It reminds me of, there's a movie, I don't know, have you seen Creed? Have you seen like the Rocky and then the Creed series?
No.
The boxing case. Okay, so I've got this
thing boxing. My heart is too sensitive for boxing.
So the thing about boxing that I respect, so I boxed for 2 years, but I didn't box anybody but myself. So I had a trainer and it was all about exercise and it was all about self-discipline. It was about getting myself in a place where I could go game. And so whether it was game in my business or game in my relationship or game as a parent, because, you know, I had two kids. One didn't sleep till they were 8, first night through. The other one was 5. I thought I was going to die. So it was more about endurance of self, right? And the one movie that I absolutely love is the Creed one. And so if you don't know the story, so he goes to Rocky and says, will you train me? Will you train me? And Rocky's like, no way, no way, no way, right? Finally, he agrees. And so he just goes, okay, I'll train you. And he takes him to a mirror and, you know, he's got his gloves on and he's like, so you need to shadow box against the mirror. He goes, look in there. He goes, that's your number one opponent. Right. That, and when you talked about being close to that, because his face was right close to the mirror, is it doesn't matter who you're fighting, what you're fighting, what you're up against. It's really you against you. And yet, Rocky was there to, you know, coach him through to the win, you know, whatever the win looked. So when you're talking, that just popped into my mind. Mm-hmm. So I know people are listening and they're like, oh, that could be me. That's me. Ooh, I'm defiant. Ooh, I'm this quadrant. I'm that quadrant. Is there anything, I mean, other than picking up the phone and dialing and getting yourself a good coach, obviously, Terry, is there things that people can do to get themselves a little unstuck? Like, is there
a big thing is to, so I have this tool, I mentioned it earlier, but it's called situational purpose. And getting super clear on what it is that you want. And I'm talking about like full picture, paint a picture of what you want. I'm not talking about numbers on a spreadsheet. I'm not talking about how many clients to have. I'm talking about, who do you want to be? What do you want people to actually say at your funeral? What are the things that if you know, something happened, that they'd be like, oh my gosh, there is a void there because this person filled that for me. Looking and going, okay, so what is it that I ultimately want? Setting that intention of a situational purpose. And I mean, I do this all the time. Like I do this for big things and small things. So even like going in and having a one-on-one meeting with somebody in a Starbucks, what do I want to get away from that meeting with? How do I want to leave them feeling? Like, and for me, I always want to help people feel empowered. That's a thing for me. It's not always for everybody. But then I have an emergency action plan. When I get triggered, when I get waylaid, I have an emergency action plan for what it is that I want. So I'll tell you an example of this in my life. Okay. So to help you figure out what I'm saying. So my son, my boys play hockey. I mentioned that. One of them, both of them went out to Saskatchewan to play hockey. And my older son and I are oil and water. We're actually exactly the same, to be fair. But you know, we know each other's buttons really, really well. And he ended up having a head injury that he was not able to play hockey anymore. So he had too many concussions. And this was before, this was in grade 11. Okay.
Okay.
And so he goes back out there to play. He's all better, right? For September of grade 12, goes out there, and his coach calls us and says, you know, he's just not there. Like, I don't think he should be playing hockey. And so we had this very angry, very directionless teenage son. And he was coming home. He stayed the whole year for school. He comes back after grade 12. And I knew that he'd always wanted to be a hockey player. He couldn't imagine his life without hockey. And he was leaving this boarding school experience where he had all his friends and da da da. So I sat back and I'm like, okay, I could easily hop into the mom mode of, okay, so let's get you some, you know, therapy. We'll get you some help. We'll get you a chiropractor. We'll get you, you know, let's get in, get you, go to school, get you a job. We'll get you a tutor. We'll get whatever it is you need. We'll fix. But ultimately what I wanted for my relationship with my son was to be a soft place for him to land, to be somebody that he could come to me and be like, Mom, I'm really struggling. And I don't know what I want for my life, but I just don't feel safe, you know, because, you know, Maslow's safety is a thing. Like his whole rug had been pulled out from underneath him. So when he comes home and he's angry and he wants to kick the puppy, and I'm pointing at me when I say that, for those of you that are listening, and he wants to, you know, he's only 18 years old. He doesn't have those experiences, that emotional intelligence. So when he triggers me and, you know, my immediate reaction is to fight back.
Yep.
Or to try to fix, or to try to whatever, I can be like, wait, I want to be a soft place for him to land. How would that respond? How would that respond right now? What is that litmus test for what it is that I ultimately want? Ultimately, I want to be somebody that he can trust, love, and feel safe with. So how do I do that? So that's an example of situational purpose. And it changed my relationship with my son completely.
Right.
Because I was able to have the wherewithal to step back and be like, okay, so I understand you're hurting, and this is something that I want. He doesn't know any of this. Like, this was not him meeting.
Not conscious.
It's not conscious, but it's about having that pause, pressing the pause button and being like, what do I ultimately want? What do I really want? So when it comes to an entrepreneur, for example, yes, we look at our numbers and say, okay, I want to make, you know, X number of dollars this year. I want to have this many clients, this many da, 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 da. But who do I want? What does that mean? Like, it doesn't mean making money. It means being able to step and look at yourself in the mirror and saying, wow, you know, you killed it. Nice work. I like myself when I look at myself in the mirror. And being able to be like, yeah, that's who I really want to be. I want to be somebody that inspires people. I want to be like in your Neoria business, right? Like, I want to be able to say, wow, I have all these people that feel better about themselves because of me doing something for them, then introducing them to this product, that product, whatever it is, right? It's not about sales. It's about relationships. It's about changing the world one interaction at a time. So am I doing that? What does my day look like? How am I setting myself up for that? And if it means getting your books in order, do it. That's
right.
In the room talking, you know, if it means setting yourself up and having Q1, 2, 3, 4 goals and breaking them down into bite-sized pieces, perfect. But if it means also, you know, if it looks like you're working yourself to the bone and stressing out about things, then that's not going to be something that's going to ultimately serve you.
That's awesome. That's a great example on both sides, right? Just a really great example of staying true to what's really important to you. And then knowing that, because that other person may not know, or that other situation may not know, or when you get off a call with someone who's incredible, right? Or having choice. I think it just really, it's an empowering thing. For some people, it's like, okay, I really want to hit this, so the bookkeeping doesn't look so bad. Or I really want to hit this, and I am fine to farm out the bookkeeping, coming to that place of, and then why didn't I do it before? Well, maybe you didn't feel like you deserved it, or it doesn't come from the culture that you came from, or you think you should be doing it all, or whatever, right? And having that self-observation. Yeah. So lots about success, lots about priority management, lots about achievement, right? And getting to know thyself and throwing self-sabotage out the window, because the more you work on it with someone like Terry, the more you see it when it first starts happening, instead of it getting ingrained. You know, it's like, I always, when it's ingrained, I just get this vision of this record player going round and round and round, right? And it just kind of gets deeper and deeper. And so at that preventative stage, you get to catch those things. I'm going to completely throw the conversation in another way, because I know that we're going to be wrapping up here pretty quickly. And I'm going to ask you a question just completely off the cuff.
Okay.
So, you know, I love music, and yep. I believe music to be a very powerful healing, you know, energy. And I know that you have you have favorite music. So if you're heading to a desert island, you're on your way. It's you and you, just you and you get to go on this lifetime remaining vacation, and you could only bring one album, and I'll let you take an album, because one song would be just completely unkind. So if you could take an album with you, what would it be?
Closer to Fine by the Indigo Girls.
All right.
It's funny, I don't think in albums. I'm kind of but that song, I couldn't live without it.
Oh, you're going to have to send it to me. You're going to have to send it to me. I don't know that one, but I.
Oh my God.
If you like it, then I'm sure I'll love it. Send it to me. You got to send me the link to that.
I sailed my ship. Sailed my ship of safety till I sank it is one of my favorite lines.
Ooh.
Right. Like, cool. Yeah. Closer to the more I seek my source for some definitive, the closer I am to find. It's awesome. A good one. Yeah.
Okay, so I have one more question for you. So here's the beauty. You know, I was going to say the beauty. The beauty is starting over. It's a clubhouse thing that I'm on. But here's the beauty of being an entrepreneur, or opening the doors. I'm just going to say opening the doors. Being a creative, because entrepreneurs are creative. That's why I love using the word creative in the show. So you're creative and you decided to open the doors and expand. And then there's the coolest things that can happen. Now, one, self-observation, you get to this next level. Some is all the things that we talk about in entrepreneurship. But sometimes it's just you meet somebody that you never would have met otherwise, or you're on a call with somebody that you never would have been on a call with. You know, it's because you took this quest. What's one of the coolest things or people or places or ideas that have happened to you because of being an entrepreneur? And you can take your time on it.
Probably one of the coolest things that happened to me. I'm a member of a couple different networking groups, and one of them offers free, like two free coaching calls with a premier success coach. And I decided to step outside the box and go with a guy in Milwaukee. And it was like the end of the year. This is in like 2020, or I don't actually know. Might have even been 2019. And we get talking, it was a 20-minute conversation, and it opened up this, you know, concept of you don't have to grow it alone. Like, why are you, entrepreneurship can be lonely and hard, and you don't have to grow it alone. And I was like, yes, like, I hear you. And I ended up joining his community, and which is called the Idea Collective Small Business Incubator. Joined his community and became a host. And suddenly my entire, like, everything is different now for me, because I know that I'm not alone. You know, I have a bunch of stickies right in front of my face as I sit here. But one of them is a quote from him, and it says, "I hear you, I believe in you, keep going." And that is in my, as a coach, that right there, like, I hear you, I believe in you, and I'm going to hold you capable of change and growth, and just keep going. And that whole community has changed everything for me. And it helped me create my own community. I have my own Flying V Mastermind now, which is specifically because geese like to honk at each other and rise on each other's wings. So I didn't actually go too far down the duck analogies this particular call, but yeah. Sometimes I do.
Well, when you guys call Terry, there's going to be some ducks. There's going to be some geese.
Yeah.
Very lots symbolic.
Lots of muck.
The work that she does, she's going to get you out of the muck. You're not going to be a stuck duck, all that kind of good stuff. Mm-hmm. Look, thank you so much for sharing, giving people tips and things to walk away with and digest and chew on, for lack of a better word. I think it's important to kind of do that, you know, give people things to think about in your, that was a brilliant, brilliant show. We're going to wrap up, but is there anything else that you want to share? I do want you to share to people on how to reach you. Not everybody looks in the show notes, which of course we're going to have that. And if you're on any media of mine, you will see this episode being, you know, being sent everywhere and then sent everywhere again. So you're going to get to know Terry, but reach out to her personally. Where can people do that, Terry?
Well, I'm on everywhere. It's super easy to remember, at Unstuck Duck. Okay. But I also have a freebie that I have if you subscribe to my newsletter, which is my favorite time of the week when I send out on Fridays. I just send out some thoughts. And if you were to subscribe to that, which we can put the full link in the show notes, but I'll send you 10 strategies for prevailing over procrastination. That's one of my freebies is, you know, let's just start with a few small things to prevail over procrastination. Procrastination is just a small, tiny little bit of self-sabotage, but it's the one that seems to be the most common. And it's the one where people really can relate. So you can go to go.unstuckduck.ca/subscribe. And I will put that, I'll send that to you as well. But
okay, great. Awesome. So you can go to, is that a website?
Yeah, go.unstuckduck.ca/subscribe.
Perfect. Okay, so there's the website. There's the Instagram handle. Such a pleasure having you on the show today. I know that this will not be the last. I have, you know when you know. And so listen, listeners and viewers, and I just love the fact that people can see us as well, because I'm a visual person, clearly, right? You'd think I was Italian. I talk like this. So, for those that are listening, I'm shaking my hands. I just love the fact that we do both because people learn in so many different ways. So to offer that to people, I love it. If you want to be a guest, you know where to find us. If you want to come into the book that's releasing at the end of the year, you know where to find us. And so I'm just so pleased and happy to be able to have a show that gives you the availability to hear the nuggets that might be the thing that blows your business up, just like Terry did when she had a 20-minute call. People can, I always say it's the moments, not the hours, that shift your business. And it's that one call. It's that one person. It's the, I turned left. It was, you know, one of our people, her dream was to meet, you know, Keith Urban. And sure enough, as she was busking, guess what? She said yes. And guess what? Keith Urban came walking up and listening to her. You just don't know. I mean, maybe I'm an optimist on hope, but I think that's what really taking the mission on is just knowing that there's this ongoing process of goodness that comes into your life. So honestly, you guys, just go out there and be brave, whatever that means to you. And we can't wait to see you next week on the Mission Accepted show. So thank you and bless you. And please share the episode.